everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to The Love Code. Thank you for joining me for another really inspiring conversation. You know, if you've been listening for me for a while, or if you're tuning in for the very first time, first of all, I want to welcome and welcome you. Hope you'll be back and be listening on a regular basis. And this show really is the opportunity to inspire you, to really expand your horizons, I would say, to introduce you to spiritual traditions, people who have inspirational journeys, wisdoms to share, and really to remind us of who we are and how we are all connected to the source of love. And that's really the true power that we all embrace, and we are all getting to reconnect within this lifetime. So that's really what this Love Code program is for. That's what I see as its purpose. So again, thanks for joining me. And all of our shows do get archived. If you miss any of them or would like to catch up on previous shows, as well as listening to the other podcast I do on Progressive Radio Network, which is called What Women Must Know, you can always go to Podbean, which has archived all the shows, and that's an easy way to get all the shows. Or you can always go to my website, which is drcherylselman.com, opt in there, and I send them out to you every week. So I hope you'll be coming back and continuing the journey of our own exploration and transformation. So speaking of transformation, I have a very special guest who will be sharing this hour. And he is calling us all the way from Romania. I'm talking to Howard G. Charing. And I titled this conversation like this. The Unlikely Life of an English Computer Geek Who Became a Visionary Artist and Shaman. And Howard, I hope that's okay with you, but you have an amazing transformational story, and that's kind of how I want to pique people's curiosity. So let me just share a little bit about Howard. So Howard G. Charing was born in London and lived in the Netherlands, the USA, and Peru. He worked in the computer industry from 1970 to 1991. He quit the industry following an elevator crash in which he suffered serious injuries, a broken neck, and severe spinal damage. In this accident, he had a near-death experience and transformed his life as a result. This accident closed the door to his quote-unquote normal, prosaic life. However, new doors leading to exploration and adventure opened. Over the last 30 years, he has become acknowledged as an international workshop leader on shamanism, an author, and visionary artist. For over 20 years, he has worked with some of the most respected and extraordinary shamans and elders in the Andes, the Amazon forest, and the Philippines. He has run training and development courses on behalf of the prestigious Foundation for Shamanic Studies, and for many years worked with the Eagle's Wing Center for Contemporary Shamanism, one of the foremost training organizations in Europe. In 2016, Howard organized the first major conference in East Europe, Suniruna, I believe it's called Suniruna Awakenings, dedicated to visionary consciousness. This conference featured luminaries such as Graham Hancock, Dennis McKenna, and Jan Hoonan, plus others. Howard's books are The Amazonian Angel Oracle, The Ayahuasca Visions of Pablo Amaringo, The Accidental Shaman, and Plant Spirit Shamanism. He is a visionary artist and holds workshops on shamanism and shamanic healing. And his latest creation is the Amazonian Angel Oracle, which is a 33-card deck and guidebook published by Inner Traditions and inspired by the visionary art and wisdom of Pablo Amaringo. And I have to say, it's a extremely beautiful oracle deck. And I really love my deck that I received. So welcome, Howard, to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you on the Love Code, and we have such an interesting show ahead of us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Cheryl. Thank you.
You know, I guess the best place to start, and I always like to ask my guests to begin with their personal journey, and you've had such a profound transformational experience and journey that truly set you off on a totally different life than you were living, but not, you know, a journey that was challenging at first, obviously, having such an injury. So let's talk a little bit about that journey you've been on, Howard, and what happened to you in this, you know, this lifetime of discovering your true self, your true purpose.
You mentioned it really in the introduction, but yeah, the elevator crash was something. It was one of the most strangest experiences I've ever had in my life, probably the most strangest experience, because the lift is falling down, the elevator is falling down. Sorry, I use the English thing, lift instead of elevator. And in that, time stopped. I mean, time absolutely stopped, and I was gone. I wasn't here anymore. I left my body. I was somewhere, and then I'm still conscious, still aware, still thinking. I'm not in my body. I'm somewhere. And no, I don't want to die, because I knew I was going to die, and that realization I was going to die in this crash instigated kind of the experience. And then I'm back in my body after deciding, no, I don't really want to die. I'm back in my body. And I'm thinking, what do I do now? And I thought, I know. I've seen in the cartoons, I'll jump up in the air. So when the elevator bottom hits the thing below, I'll be in the air. Of course, I tried, but you can't move because I realized later. Physics is obviously not my forte. You can't move because you're in free fall too. You're in free fall. You have the box around you, but you're in free fall, so you can't move. And then I realized I knew exactly what to do. That's the magic thing. I knew exactly what to do. So I reached into my pocket, took out my my tissues, and shoved my tissues in, jammed them in my teeth and my mouth, and then went into a crouch. And as soon as I had done that, the elevator smashed into the bottom, and I'm down below the basement. And the first thing that happened was my lower jaw smashed against my upper jaw really, really, really hard. And if my tongue was anywhere near that, that would have been chopped off. So just knowing to put the tissues in the mouth was kind of magical. And going into a crouch, that really saved my life, because the injuries I had would have been much more severe if I was just standing up. So that was a kind of a magical, miracle moment. But time stopped. And all this is happening. All this is happening. I felt like I'd lose the time, so there was no time, and I'll do this, I'll try this, I'll look at that, and so on. And it was just in seconds. I mean, the elevator's falling down at terminal velocity, 11.7 meters a second. That's fast. Yet for me, time stopped, and I knew exactly what to do to save my life and to save everything, really. And that was magic. But I was really injured after that. I was really in a bad way, I couldn't stand up. I couldn't sit down. I was had a special thing around my neck, and it was really, really painful. It was a lot of pain. Everything was crushed, my knees, everything, so I was having lots of treatment. And one day, the therapist said to me, "Something very strange." He said to me, "Howard, do you want to get better?" And this is like a month after the accident, and I thought. I didn't say yes right away because I somehow got used to being kind of an invalid, really. But I got myself together. I said, "Yeah, I want to get well again." Okay. Then he said to me, "Forgive all the people that you blame for this accident, because it was done by carelessness and so on, by the maintenance people." So I gripped my teeth and, with all my sincerity, all my force, I forgave them. And as I forgave them, a weight of 10 tons lifted from me. It was like a huge weight lifted from me. And from that moment, everything was different. I could see colors and shapes around people. I was in a different reality, really. It was forgiveness, I think, was the key to this transformation. Obviously, it took a couple more years before I could walk, could bend my legs and that kind of stuff. But it changed my life, I've recovered now. Obviously, I can't do too many crazy things, but I've recovered. My life is whole again, but it's a different life, a very different life. And if I was asked, if I had the opportunity to go back in time and not step into the elevator, I would probably step into it because knowing even all the pain and grief, what would happen from that? And it was my life changed completely. I mean, that's transformation. From that, I started to find out what was going on with me. Why was I seeing these things? Why was I in this beautiful reality? And then I got through, started with spiritual healing, and then suddenly met someone who is Leah Rutherford, you know, the founder of the Eagle's Wing Shamanism Center. And I said to him, look at this crazy stuff that's going on. You know, he said, it's not crazy. It's been around for thousands of years, and it's called shamanism. So right away, I was connected to shamanism, and that's the beginning of my story. And so it's been hard work. It's been transformation and healing go on. It's not something that you do once. It's something that you go deeper and deeper, layer through layer. And it's a beautiful journey. So I think that's my transformation story.
So before that accident happened, were you at a place in your life where you were feeling kind of at a dead end and there was, you know, a sense of, you know, lacking true purpose and meaning? You know, was there something brewing within you that was, or maybe stirring within you would be a way to say it?
Yeah, something was stirring in me. Although I wasn't kind of spiritual in the spiritual sense, you know, like I saw it as an essential part of my life. I certainly was the philosophical perspective on life. I was in my 30s when it happened. So, yeah, I was still growing. But my life was, I had lots of distractions in my life and things to on the material world. I had a job, a very high-powered job. Into the material things, start with family and so on. So it was more orientated to everyday life. But when the accident happened, then that everyday life had to change. It wasn't me anymore. It was such a strange experience when suddenly your life changes and you have to move in a new direction. So it wasn't planned for me. I mean, as a person, I didn't plan it, obviously. But it's been a profound journey. And in this journey, what has been gratifying is that so many people have been helped by my journey, by my work, the things that have happened to me. And I describe a lot of this experience in the book, which is called The Accidental Shaman, which is part biography and part stories and anecdotes and experiences. So it's gratifying, you know. So what more can I say, really?
Well, you know, when you have such a radical departure from the known reality that you lived in for the first 30 something years, and suddenly an event occurs, that a radical event occurs, and suddenly it awakens this power, this wisdom, this journey within you that you probably, you know, obviously before this event didn't even know existed. And so it's like, in a sense, a rude awakening hour.
It's a rude awakening.
Reality, right? You know?
Yeah, for sure.
How profound to have been guided along this way. Because were you sensitive and psychic before this happened?
No, I wasn't. Oh, yeah. One thing about the story about the guy who told me to, he said I should forgive. Yeah, I forgot to tell that. When I did my forgiveness, I asked him, where did that come from? He said, what are you talking about? I didn't say anything. He had no idea that he told me to forgive. He had no idea, had no memory of it. That was also part of this story, that he had no idea. He said to me, do I want to get well again? I need to forgive. He had absolutely no memory of that. And so right away, you're in a different kind of reality here, you know.
Definitely. Strange things were afoot.
Strange things. And it was beautiful. I mean, that weight lifted from me. I mean, it opened up my my psychic awareness, my psychic center. And I remember going home and I was in a kind of state of bliss, and I was seeing kind of luminescent clouds of glowing fluorescent particles everywhere. And I had no guidance at that time, but that's why I started to find out what was happening, what was going on. Am I going crazy? What's happening here? You know, and I found out I wasn't going crazy, which is the good news. But it was definitely unsettling. And also, the other thing is, as well, when you have an experience like this and things change and develop, it becomes very hard to communicate this to people you work with and people you know, your friends. So there's also kind of a shifting away from people you know in your life, you know. But you have to find kind of people who a different community of people, a different mindset of people. So it was not just a physical shift; it was a shift at many, many levels.
Absolutely, it's like your whole frequency changed. But it was like when you're telling that story from your therapist, who these words came out of his mouth, right? These words from somewhere came out of his mouth. It's like it was like the magic. It's like you pressed a magic door, you know, that opened.
Yeah.
That was the key that opened up a whole new world to you. Forgiveness.
So you know, forgiveness is a really important thing, and it's really important to forgive. I learned that lesson, and I really do my best not to harbor. Though I like the idea that I can hold a grudge, but I don't hold grudges because it's a dumb thing to do. You know, the only person you harm is yourself, you know. Everything I've done is taught me ways to live in a better way. And I'm not holding grudges. I can get angry. Of course I get angry. Everybody gets angry. So it's normal to get angry. But you don't hold on to the anger. You release it in some way. You know, you don't keep it in. And I was very angry with this. It's like they destroyed my life. Da, 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 da. Grudge, grudge, grudge. Anger, anger, anger. And I forgave them. And that was the shift. That was the change. So I recommend to anybody who's listening on your show that if you're angry with somebody, whatever the reason, just forgive them. Forgive them totally. It's not about them. It's about you.
So I just want to stay on this for a moment before we go into the rest of your amazing life and your purpose. But how did you do that forgiveness? But I mean, people say forgive, but what was it for you? How did you make that shift from feeling victimized to realizing in some way it's all meant to be? What did you do specifically?
Well, the forgiveness, as I said, I had to grit my teeth. I had to use all my force. I had to go into my body, my gut, and all the strength I had in me. Totally, sincerely forgave, you know, without any conditions. I just forgave them, but it wasn't just a casual, yeah, I forgive you. It wasn't like that. It really was a kind of a total, maximum, emotional, physical effort to do this, but I did it with sincerity and with force, and the magic happened after that.
Well, the whole moment must have been magic, because these words came through your therapist and out him. It was a force that was a spiritual force that was present. Created a whole. It's like creating a portal of possibilities in that moment.
Yeah, that's I think that's what happened. I mean, because he had no memory, no awareness of what happened. That he didn't recall anything. And so I just dropped the subject with him. It was something came through him, a spiritual power came through him. No doubt about that.
Mm, I would think so. So you're in this new life now, and you're discovering and learning about shamanism. For those who are listening, and well, you know, it's a word that we're hearing a lot of lately. But I don't know if people really understand what a shaman is. How would you define shaman, Howard?
Well, yeah. Well, it's such a an item of contentious discussion. You know, you see on Facebook all these people arguing this is a shaman, this is not a shaman, and so on. So there is the academic perspective. A shaman is somebody from a certain culture, certainly from the Siberian, Northern Europe culture, who connects to the spirits. The spirits come through him, and he can do his healing work, his divination work, and whatever, as the spirits of a kind of in partnership with the shaman. And typically it's hereditary or due to some life-changing event like a near-death or accident or something or severe illness. And although academically it's confined, the word comes from Siberia, the Tungus people. It's now been adopted everywhere. And the purists are really upset about this. And, you know, you're not a shaman, you're not this, you're not that. But, you know, everything changes. Everything's influenced by something else. Technically speaking, the shamans in the Amazon rainforest are not really shamans from that perspective. I mean, they operate the same way. They work through plants. They work with the plant consciousness and so on. And the plant consciousness, they master the plant. And through their knowledge and wisdom with the plant, they're able to help people, such as things like ayahuasca and many other plants. But to me, a shaman is somebody who allows themselves, this is my personal view, you know, allows themselves to connect to a higher order consciousness. You can call this your spirit, you can call this higher order consciousness, you can call this your own higher order consciousness. But the everyday person, there's another mind, another consciousness that you are connected to or becomes part of you. And you work from that different kind of level. And this is how I work. Although I don't call myself a shaman, people call me a shaman, and I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty with everybody. You call me what you want, you know. But but you can call myself a healer, curandero, whatever. But a shaman is somebody also a lot of animistic aspects to this as well. The animistic worldview, everything is alive, and that's we in the West see things as inorganic, devoid of life. But to an animist, to a shaman, everything is alive. It's not just some kind of a cliche. It really is. And when you know this, when you work with this, you can really communicate with the mind, the consciousness, the spirit of minerals, of stones, of crystals, of plants, and with animals. So it's only the human hubris that we are the crown of creation. We're above all this kind of stuff. That is kind of taking it away from our culture. But a lot of people, and we had this discussion before we started the show, are really being drawn to there is something other. There is something, there's a deeper meaning. There is something behind all this. What I'm being taught is not true. It's just a view that's been shown to me and taught to me from as a young child as fact. But it's really just a perspective. And I think people these days are now freer to explore their spiritual dimension. Before it was all maintained by institutions, religions, and churches, and so on. And now, since the 1960s and 70s, there's been a huge, well, it's been growing, actually, a movement towards more of personal autonomy, personal spiritual autonomy, where people are able and have the means and the people there to show them and to help them to discover this deeper awareness that everything is alive. And from that perspective, things are different. You know, it's fascinating.
It certainly is fascinating because there are other dimensions than just the one we experience with our five senses. And you know, I think that's why people are so drawn to movies like The Matrix, which has been my favorite movie as well. It's like we're emerging out of this one fabricated reality that we've been taught. You know, there are cultures that teach different perceptions of reality, you know, and those cultures can see things and feel things that our culture has taught us not part of our programming, so to speak, but there's so much more going on here than meets the eye, right, Howard? So that's what people are yearning for, and I think probably more than ever before. just asking about the shaman, I remember like in the 60s, everyone wanted to go to India to become gurus, right? Yogis, gurus. So now everyone is really wanting to, take on the shaman role. I see that anyway when I travel around in South America, Central America, or wherever I go. But because I just think there's ultimately such a growing awareness that there something's drawing us to wake up. Something's drawing us to wake up. So
yeah,
I don't know. What are your thoughts about that?
There is a shift. I mean, you can call it kind of a vibrational shift. I don't want to put it into geometric terms like 2D, 3D, 4D, 5D kind of things. But certainly, in my experience, it's the shift is from a denser energetic vibration to a lighter energetic vibration. And I think that's the best way. That's how I experience it, and not just with me, but in general. And people are much more open to this. Of course, when there's a big change, there's also opposition, there's also resistance, so the resistance is strong as well, and so you can see how this is manifesting. It's manifesting in a polarization for people who are much more material orientated towards things, towards cars, clothes, and so on, and objects of status. And to people who kind of moved away from that, people who are into what is my life purpose? Why am I here? What can I do? What is happening? And that shift will take generations, but it's taking place. But you see the polarization now,
Yeah, well, absolutely. So I want us to continue on your journey and your story. So tell us about your experience that took you to Peru.
Yeah, I was in Peru in the 90s, and I heard about ayahuasca and the shamans, and I thought, yeah, I was drawn to it in some way. I thought it wasn't like, I must do this kind of thing. I thought, yeah, this is something I feel drawn to. So I started working with the shamans in the Amazon, and it was very beautiful. The ayahuasca ceremonies were very, very powerful. Wasn't just ayahuasca, started to work with the plants, diet plants, because plants have a certain qualities, certain attributes, and they can also open many, many doors. They're not hallucinogenic, but they have very, very powerful effect. That's called dieta, the plant dieta. And then somewhere, I think 1998, ayahuasca literature and beautiful, and I've always been interested in art, by the way. So when I picked up Ayahuasca Visions by Pablo Marengo, it was published in 1991. That really had a really beautiful effect, beautiful stories in there, and the paintings were very, very powerful. And my friend and my colleague who worked, we co-authored the Ayahuasca Visions by Pablo Marengo book, which came out in 2011. One night, I think in 2005 or 2006 maybe, could be, I had an ayahuasca ceremony. In this ceremony, it was all visions and visions and visions of Pablo Marengo's motifs, his artwork. And I thought, wow. And in the middle of all this, the voice, the ayahuasca, said to me very clearly, Howard, do write a book about Pablo's latest work. Clear message. And when the ceremony ended, I thought, wow. So I sat with it for a day on my hammock just thinking about this. And I thought, yes, I'm going to do it. So we went off to see Pablo after the retreat we were on was over. I knew Pablo beforehand, by the way, so it wasn't a stranger. We were friends. We mentioned the idea, and his face lit up, and that's how it started. So I think I didn't really answer your question, but I kind of moved on to another subject. But It certainly changed my life, because working with Pablo was a master in the true meaning of the word, and it's been he's not just his art, but his spiritual philosophy, his spiritual wisdom have been very, very powerful influences in my life, for sure.
Well, tell us more about who Pablo Marengo was and his gifts. Which, beside being a visionary artist based on his experiences I would imagine, with ayahuasca journeying. But he obviously was a really special human being.
Absolutely.
Can you share a little bit more about who this man was?
Well, I mean, he was one of the world's great visionary artists, and he was a kind of a, and his paintings, his visions, he painted his visions. He was a shaman. He practiced as a very senior shaman, and he remembered his visions, and he was able to paint them, but not just paint them as in imagery. Also, there was a deep spiritual meaning and purpose behind all of his motifs and how he communicated. He was a master communicator of the ayahuasca experience, and his paintings opened kind of a doorway to the worlds of ayahuasca. And the other thing is this: it's kind of Pablo's rich paintings. They embodied the mythological world of the Amazonian peoples, but contained, and this is really important for Pablo, his ecological message and spiritual message and ecological message. And he retired as a shaman because he was too good at his job, and all the bad guys, the brujos and the hechirios, whose victims he was healing, they turned on Pablo. And the one got to a stage, Pablo said, "Well, I've had enough of this, you know." So he retired as a practicing shaman back in the 70s and became a full-time artist and teacher at his school in Pucallpa in Peru, the Uscaya school. And over the years, Pablo's main reason for his artwork, to sell his artwork, to do so, was to fund the school. And it wasn't just teaching children artwork. He was teaching people, children, spiritual values. He was teaching philosophy. He was teaching them languages. It became his number one purpose was to teach children. And the school is still going. It's beautiful. His grandsons are now running the school, and his son is participating in this thing. So Pablo's former students are working there. And it's fascinating how many people have been helped by Pablo. There's a whole bunch of really good visionary artists who would have had no career, no life, really. Maybe a taxi driver or something, a motor car driver. Some of them were. And now they're internationally recognized artists and so on. So people learn mathematics, languages, and they want to further education. So Pablo's reason for everything was to teach children, help children. But he also opened the door to many Westerners, and I would say in some respects Pablo shaped the ayahuasca experience for many Westerners. He was a master. Just being with him, you felt beautiful. I used to go away. I was living in Peru at the time. I used to fly back to Lima, and I just felt like I was walking on cloud nine. Just being with him, he was such a beautiful man, and he had so much wisdom, and it's been a huge inspiration in my life. And the book, The Ayahuasca Visions of Pablo Ringo, in 2011, which I co-authored with Peter Clousley, is such a gorgeous book. I mean, it's got huge, massive book, it's like weighs 2 kilos, and just got some beautiful artwork in it, and Pablo's stories. And Pablo's stories are incredible. His wisdom's beautiful, and a lot of that, some of the stories he told me, which didn't come in the Ayahuasca Visions book, I managed to kind of weave in the ancient oracle. So that's a very beautiful thing.
Well, and we're going to talk about that in a second. I'm actually looking at, I just Googled Pablo Amaringo, and his paintings are so extraordinary. I would imagine he's a self-taught artist.
Excuse me.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone just, you know, wants to do a search on Pablo Amaringo and look at his work, it's mind-boggling. I mean, the beauty, the details, these other worlds that he was bringing back from his experiences are absolute. I mean, you get lost in them. It's like entering Alice through the Looking Glass and just go into other realities.
Yeah, I mean, Pablo was not just a skilled artist. He was so skilled, he could paint by hand a banknote. That's how, and he got into trouble with that, by the way, many, many years ago. People say, oh, can you paint me a 100 solid note? Yeah, you can paint a 100 solid note. And people were using it. Of course, eventually when they found out where it was coming from, he had a visit by the authorities and he stopped. But that's how good he was. You can imagine how complex these bank notes are, and he could paint it by hand. It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, it does. You know, I guess I just would assume that he had access to, you know, to such, you know, to other dimensions that were guiding him or moving through him. I recently interviewed a man named Peter Sterling, and he had very profound spiritual experience in the desert in New Mexico, where these angels came to him and said, you need to play the harp. He didn't know how to play the harp, never played the harp. They said, it doesn't matter. We will play it through you.
Yeah,
and he has won international awards with his music that's all kind of orchestrated, literally, by the angels playing through him. So it just, I mean, someone who I look at his paintings and you know he's bringing through amazing healing energies and frequencies.
There's no question about it. Pablo was present in both realities at the same time. That's what's beautiful about this. He was like what they call these days, like a medium, a channel, but he was there in this reality, in that reality. So it was, as I said, it was just a delight. Delightful experience just to be with him, you know, because
what a blessing.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a blessing to have a master like that in your life. And, was he a Shipibo Indian?
No, he wasn't, no. But he lived in Pucallpa, and so there's a massive Shipibo, there's a big Shipibo community not far from Pucallpa in the Ucayali department, you know, where Pucallpa is. There's some big Shipibo communities, so they're part of the fabric and texture of that world.
Because when I've been to Peru and just a short time in the Andes with the shaman, Quechua shaman, it's like these are such dedicated beings to their spiritual purpose in life, which is to really uplift and transform and heal and connect people to their to these other dimensions, to themselves. It's powerful, and work that has great responsibility, which is why a lot of people see the glamour of shamanism, but it's huge responsibility, and I'm sure you know that because you facilitate these types of experiences.
Yeah, many of the shamans are very humble in spirit, very humble, very simple people, and they're kind of dedicated, although they're not sophisticated like us in the West and so on, and they have trouble operating a modern computer device or phone or something. They have a different kind of wisdom, and part of this wisdom is that they know that people are coming to them from the West. For help, for a shift, for healing, and they do this with great dedication and great and in great humility. And it's such a beautiful thing to witness. And of course, when you ask them, why are you kind of working with all these Westerners and so on? And they often say, well, this is what I have to do because this is what the spirit has told me. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness, right? Thank goodness they've let us receive this sacred knowledge that they have.
Yeah, they're sharing it. Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that they're sharing their wisdom and their knowledge to help us, that should be respected and not kind of appropriated as people do. You know, I want to be a shaman. I get the shaman kind of cape and hat and so on. Yeah, I'm a shaman, but no. These guys do it because it's in their cultures and it's in their life, it's who they are, what they do, and I think we need to really respect that much more.
Oh, absolutely. So can I, if we just move along a bit, I'm curious to know, what was it that brought you on your journey to Romania. What is it about Romania that has been the place that you've kind of landed and settled and do your work in?
Well, you know, I became a kind of a vagabond in 2008. I lived in Peru, lived in the States, and so on. And anyway, I had to leave the States because they told me to go, basically. And came back to England, and it's just small things which really, really, you know, can have a huge effect. And the in 2012, the Olympic Games were coming to London. And I thought, I don't want to be here. You know, a million people coming here. They've got the kind of aircraft carriers and battleships on the rivers. They've got anti-terrorist missiles here. There'll be hundreds of thousands of people coming here. I just don't want to be here. You know, I'm not interested. I don't want to be here. So where shall I go? Romania popped up. And I've been here before. I used to do workshops. Have friends that did workshops in Romania back in the early 2000s. And so I went there and I was made very, very welcome. And I won't go into the details, but I was made very welcome. And then I was at this... I was in the countryside, very beautiful, and no television, nothing, and no radio, so I didn't have any. The Olympic Games could be in another planet, so to speak. And I was on my hammock by a river in the mountains, very beautiful. And someone said, "Hey, let's basically go to Brasov, and I'll give you a lift back to Brasov." I thought, "Yeah, why not?" So I came to Brasov, where I live now, and beautiful city. It's in the mountains. It's surrounded by mountains and forests. It's absolutely beautiful. I was walking around the center. In the central the old square, I'm thinking this is really nice. Why don't I come and live here? And boom, that was it. And so I go back to London, pack up my bags. First I found a place to live. Yeah, so I look at a few places to rent, and the place I really liked was on a mountain, beautiful views, and the son of the owner who showed me around, he had read my books. He knew where I was. And he said, "Oh, please come and live here." I thought, "Well, I can't get a better sign than that, you know." And I'm still here, and so everything was like a red carpet was laid out, and my work in Romania is well received, very well received. I do a lot of work here, made a lot of good connections, a lot of good friends, and certainly my work is held in very good regard, and. What can I say? And it's Romania's been very good to me. It's a very beautiful country. It's a big country, and there's not a big population. There's like I think 20 million the population, and a lot of space. It's very beautiful, and I like the people. I like the countryside, and so that's how I came here. It was just one of those things, you know. The Olympic Games was the I was living in London. I didn't really enjoy living in London, by the way. I was living in the Redwood Forest up in Northern California. So going to London was a bit of a shock. And coming to Romania, he's given me that living in the mountains, forest kind of vibe, which I like.
It sounds like it's very pristine energy there.
Yeah. That's a very special place.
Yes, I'm sure it is. I get a sense of that. So... I want you to talk about this new deck that you've created. You've written several books, you know, The Accidental Shaman. You've written books about Pablo Marengo. And all of a sudden, now you've created this incredible Amazonian angel oracle deck, working with angels, divas, and plant spirits. So how did this come about?
Well, back in 2014 or 15, I was visiting Pablo's family, and his son was showing me some sketches and some drawings of celestial beings and angels and so on. And I hadn't, you know, some of them I recognised because some of these angels are featuring, you know, as a part component of Pablo's paintings. And so I was looking through this, and this is really nice, some really fantastic. Wouldn't it be a good, nice thing to do a thing about angels, you know, and. Although the original artwork was more like sketches and drawings, it wasn't something you could use, but it really inspired me. And when I get back home, back in Romania, I made a few sketches. I had an artist, graphic designer, do them. And I wrote a few narratives and so on. And then nothing happened because I just went off somewhere and did my thing and traveling and whatever. And so I sat in a box on a shelf in my workroom, studio workroom. And then came the pandemic, you know. I was in Peru at the time when it hit. I knew I had to get back. It took me three extra tickets, you know, to three extra flights to get back home. And I got back just in time. I escaped from each country just before the day or day or two before the lockdown came. You couldn't travel. People were stuck in Peru for months. It was heavy duty. They were like in compounds with security guards. They couldn't leave. And I managed to get back to Romania. And I had to stay in quarantine 14 days. I signed a document at the frontier with the police. I'll self-isolate. So okay, I did that. I mean, it was great. I could get food delivered and things. So I was very happy to be home anyway. But okay, cut long story short. I was thinking, how long is this pandemic lockdown gonna last? You know, and when will my life get back to normal? So I did a shamanic journey, a divination journey, and I was shown my life to get back to normal October 2021. Now, I'm here, I am in March 2020, so that's like 18 months. I thought, oh my God, 18 months, this is going to be insane. What am I going to do? I've got to do something, you know. And that night, I had a dream. And in this dream, this incorporeal being full of light and beautiful glowing particles appeared and said to me, Howard, now's the time to do it. And I knew exactly what he meant. It was the angel oracle. So the next morning, I went to the shelf, opened the box, and dusted off my notes and things. I started from there. So it was beautiful. I found the artist to work with. We worked totally on Zoom and Skype. So I was, you know, talking about the angels. I was showing them what they were doing, where they were from, what they were like. I did a few basic, very simple sketches, and they really, Karina was the graphic design of the angels, and the graphic design, the image or the file went to Alexandru in Bucharest, and he did all this painstaking coloring, colorization. So it became for them a labor of love. It was just a job in the beginning, but they really got into it, and they really, it really was for them transformative as well. So I was working with two artists, and I was doing the writing, and I was inspired, and remember many a couple of those anecdotes which I remembered. I had notes of them. I could weave in. There's some beautiful stories in here. I'm very delighted. So yeah, it came because of the pandemic. It would have sat in the box, on the shelf for maybe forever, but I had the time, I had the space, and this was a beautiful thing. It was inspirational, it was beautiful, it was sublime to do this. So I'm very, very, very happy, and the work is very beautiful. And I know Pablo would be really, really happy and with this work. It really honors him, it honors the Amazonian, the Andean traditions, and for me, it was also a transformational experience as well. Because, for example, today I started writing about the Angel of Peace, who is a very beautiful lady, Shibibo lady. She's a very beautiful, the card number 22, very, very beautiful. And all I'm writing about is death, killing, Holocaust, murder, everything, you know. And the next day, okay, how you got that out of your system, now write about peace. So everything I had to write about, I had to go into the darker bits in me to process that before I could write about the light, shall we say. It was a profound experience for me as well.
You know, as you described it, by the way, I just have to really compliment and acknowledge you. It's a magnificent deck, Howard. The paintings are just incredible, bringing these angels, these spiritual beings from the Amazon. Is it the Amazon as only, or does it come from like Andes as well, that culture?
From everywhere, because Pablo was very eclectic. I mean he would bring in, you know, bring in Oriental princes and so on, and and kings and queens, and I mean, these are celestial kings and queens, obviously, but there would be from all over the world, all cultures and so on, and ancient Egyptian, Sumerian, you know, a beautiful painting about a Sumerian goddess, and because he saw these universal forces, these are celestial beings which have transmitted and inspired humanity. So even aliens, extraterrestrials, everything. So everything converges, everything comes together with Pablo's art. And it's not just about the Amazon. It's not just about the Andes. It's very, very eclectic. So I had this eclectic spectrum to work with.
So it's like all these universal energies and beings came through and have their representation in this deck.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And when I was writing, and I wrote something, I thought, God, that's really good. You know, I mean, how did I write that? I was kind of amazed by some of the what I was writing too. I thought, well, that's brilliant. You know, and normally you don't think that, but I was quite surprised by how eloquent, how beautiful some of the words were coming through. So yeah, I was kind of bringing it through in a word level as well.
And because this is like a, it's part of your spiritual mission, I would say, right? And the fact that you got that voice that said, Howard, it's time. You obviously have had a lot of help behind the scenes, behind the wings, so to speak, that are guiding you to bring this frequency, these energies, this healing into the world. Birthing it into this dimension at this time, because it's part of a process of supporting the shift that's happening.
I could say that, but please don't get the idea that I'm highly evolved and spiritual and all these things, because I was taught not the early days.
Please don't go down that road.
I was taught like you train a donkey. No, a donkey, you know, the carrot and the stick. That's how I was taught back in the day. You know, when I had a negative, angry thought about something, I'd get a bang on my head. Bam! Oh, that really hurt. Oh, well, you know. And it took a bit of time to clear the pain, you know. And I have a nice, harmonious, benevolent thought. And this beautiful glow in me, you know. Eventually, I had to kind of put a policeman in my head to stop any negative energies, thoughts going out. And, that kind of got incorporated. I was trained like you train a donkey. So it wasn't all called light and love, you know, it was bang on the head, you know. So I learned the hard way and it hurt. You know?
Yeah, so we need to keep you humble. That's true. so Howard, how can people learn more about the deck? How can they purchase their own deck? And if people have been into using a tarot deck, and you're familiar with different ways to get the messages, because that's the purpose of these decks, is to use them to receive, you know, it's like connecting with your inner knowingness or maybe opening to other energies to guide you in times of need, or just to, you know, inspire you on a daily basis. So what would people, where would people need to go? How would they find out more about this beautiful Amazonian angel oracle deck that you have created?
Thank you. I've got details about this and the other books on my website, www.hgcharing.com. And they can check out, they've got pictures of the angels and summary narratives and also more about Pablo Ringo, his work, and connection links to my artwork and other books and so on. So it's a very, very kind of I think it's a kind of an informative and very beautifully designed with lots of pictures and color and art website. So that's hgcharing.com. I forgot the other part of the question. What was the other part of the question?
Oh no! It was really how to access and to learn more about your work, your books, to get the deck. But I also want to ask before we have to kind of bring this wonderful conversation to an end. Are you doing programs in either in Romania, or are you traveling? Do you have a schedule?
I have a workshop program, and that's on the website, link to the workshops and so on from the website. Yeah.
And when you do your workshops and you do the experiences, are you working with plant medicine in those ceremonies and those workshops?
No, because that would cross the line. Certainly, hallucinogenic medicines is illegal, and it wouldn't be a safe, secure setting as people mm-hmm. have experienced the insecurity and the problems with the authorities. No, I don't do that in Europe, because it has to be 100% secure, 100% safe. I know people do ayahuasca ceremonies in Europe, but unless they do it on the low down, very very quiet, they're exposing themselves. I prefer to, maybe I'm old fashioned, I prefer going to the Amazon to do it where it's home there, where it's safe, mm-hmm. where it's secure, and it's part mm-hmm. of the culture. Yeah.
Well, if people want to learn more about Howard's work, it's how hjcharing.com. Learn about all of the amazing creations, tools, programs that Howard has brought into this world. So, Howard, it's been such a pleasure to talk with you all the way from beautiful Romania. Just many blessings to you on this wonderful journey and the wonderful work that you're doing at this
thank
time.
Thank you very much,
on
Cheryl. Thank you. It's very kind of you to say that. And thank you for inviting me to your show. It's much appreciated. Thank you.
I'm so happy we've had this conversation. It's been a real joy. And because we're at the end of the show, I want to thank everyone for listening, tuning in, come back every week. Great conversations, inspirational, uplifting, transforming, the only way to go. And until next week, may your week be filled with love, peace, and harmony. Bye for now.